At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
All right, Jesse, so what would you say to somebody who's starting a dog training business? I know that you said that you kind of, you're non-traditional, you're not super professional, and I'm not either, really. I mean, I just, you know, try to give people the information they need and cut out the fluff. What would you say to somebody? Let's say somebody's like, hey, I want to start a dog training business. What would you say to them? What advice? What things have you learned over the years?
So I actually do a little mentoring, not much, just from the things I've made mistakes over the years with. And I do a couple of dog training seminars and courses for people that want to become dog trainers. Not super certified, just under me and my crazy method or approach. The biggest thing I tell people is kind of the old school Bruce Lee quote. Take what works, disregard what doesn't, and add your own flair to it.
I like
that. Right? I think that's important because when you mimic, you kind of lose. We were just talking about martial arts, right? Isn't it interesting that an instructor will teach 30 students the same way, the same amount of time, and there'll be 30 different styles?
Yeah.
Right? Put your hands up, throw jab, cross hook, and you'll have some people here, you have some people here, you have some people really tight and rigid, you have some people nice and loose, and the information was exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is where kind of like communications and the catch, not the throw. And that's a quote off my buddy, Justin Garcia, Master Chin.
Yeah, cool.
And he taught me that. He's like, dude, it doesn't matter how fast you throw a fastball. If the person can't catch it, it's irrelevant. And that's kind of like information. I always use my daughters as an example. If I throw a 92-mile-an-hour fastball at my 5-year-old daughter, it doesn't matter that I could throw a 92-mile-an-hour fastball. My daughter can't catch it.
Right.
I have to granny toss it to her. Right? And I'm not going to have her catch it. I'm going to place it in her hands.
Right.
So she could feel successful. Yay, I did it, Dad. And we could have that platform to work off of.
Yeah.
I feel the same way with dog training. Even whether you're a client, whether you're an owner, or whether you're someone that wants to become a professional. Give the information that's going to make sense. Me not being professional is a double-edged sword. Because I don't care about the theories and the methods and, you know, operative conditioning, classical conditioning, Skinner and Pavlov. Who gives a shit? It's all associations, right? You create a positive association or a negative association.
Mm-hmm.
And you work from there. And if your client could catch what you're throwing at them or pick up what you're putting down, you're winning.
Yeah.
If my students could learn that, right? Like, or anyone's trying to become a dog trainer, my best advice is find someone that you could shadow or a mentor that you actually like as an individual, that you could shoot the shit with, that you could learn, you could be professional, you could ask concrete questions and have like substance and value behind the interaction, not just this is what the book says or this is how I do things. I like the concept of fluid understanding, right? Over crystallized learning.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think you should play around so much. I think dog trainer terms, we talk about training the dog in front of you.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it goes back to, I rant a lot, my bad.
No, please.
Oh, okay.
Let's hear it.
I'm catching myself. But it's kind of like teaching strategies and learning strategies. We know that in human-to-human communication or learning, there's auditory receptor learners, visual learners, hands-on learners, and a multitude of all three. As a teacher, I have to be able to identify the 30 students in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't teach one-dimensional. I lose everybody.
Right.
I have to be able to target, manipulate, have an ace up my sleeve. I have to be able to say the same information 20 different ways. Kind of like Google Maps. Hey, you could get here, but you could go this way, that way. You could go make a U-turn, you go around, but you're still getting to the same place.
Yeah.
Right? What route is easiest for you? I think that's what people have to take, whether it be someone in starting dog training, a client, an owner, I don't care what it is. Find someone you like. Right? I'm not everybody's cup of tea, right? I always say that it's really interesting when I do an evaluation. I still do home-to-homes. That's my bread and butter. I love doing home-to-homes. It's my favorite, interacting with people. Usually I'll have the wife call me, right? And we'll do the whole like phone consultation really quick, and I'm really fun, and I'll make some jokes, and I'll say a couple of bad words just to feel my clients out, see if they're cool or not, right? I'll throw a little like, right? He's a little fucking shit. And they're like, oh, yeah, he is.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Yeah.
And then when I get to their home, the husband doesn't know what I look like.
Right.
Right? Because I always say I look like Shrek, right?
That's what you tell them?
Yeah, I was like most people. I say, "Oh, I'm Shrek," right? Like,
okay,
because I'm big to people that aren't as big as me, but I'm little to people that are bigger than me. But I just have a weird look, right? So I'll usually knock on the door, and the husband will open, but he doesn't know what I look like. And usually I'll get like a whoa, right? And immediately I'll have to disarm. I'll be like, "Hi, how are you? I'm Uncle Jess."
Cool.
Right? Immediately, and they'll be like, "Oh, okay, cool. Hi, I'm Bob," you know. And then I'll start shooting the shit with him because I have to make them trust me. I have to cultivate an understanding that I'm not here to pull your ears. I always tell all my students, like, we're not getting paid to pull people's ears, right? No one wants to pay us to tell us what everything we've done wrong. Obviously, we called you. We know we're fucking up. We know we need a different approach, right?
Yeah.
So I love using the term, like, you haven't done anything wrong. You just haven't done it right yet. So that's how I tell people they're wrong. You didn't do anything wrong. You just didn't know how to do it right. That's what I'm here for.
Right.
And that's for anything, right? But once you kind of grab your clients or grab your students or people that are going to come into the dog industry, I think there's too much of, nah, but we'll get into it. Fuck it, right? That's what we're here for. You know, whether it's positive, whether it's negative, whether it's balanced, whether it's clicker, whether blah, 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 blah. Who gives a shit? Is the client going to be successful? Is the dog going to live a better life? Mm. Are they going to get results?
Preach it.
Right? Like, I don't care if you're positive only. Fuck yeah. I don't care if you're balanced. Fuck yeah. Are your clients and your dogs doing better?
Right.
No? I don't give a fuck what you're doing. I need the dogs to do better. I need the clients to do better. We can't have that dog get euthanized. We can't get that dog rehomed. They can't go to the shelter. How do we create a harmonious coexistence and, like, I will say squeeze the juice out of life, right? How do we squeeze the juice out of that relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because obviously everything they're doing isn't working. So the only thing that will work is something they haven't done. And that's modified off of Einstein's, like, insanity quote, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Doing the same thing every day, expecting a different result.
Right.
I always say, if everything you've done hasn't worked, the only thing that will work is something you haven't done.
Right.
Like, let's do something different. Let's fucking change it up.
What do you think about people who just, where do you typically start? Like, what's your base if somebody says, well, I haven't done anything.
Right.
I haven't done anything. We adopted this dog, or, you know, my daughter picked up this puppy.
Right.
What is your, after you do the consult, you show up. What's your I'm always interested to see how different trainers, outside of an aggressive dog trying to bite you.
Correct.
Like, what do you say to a normal client? Like, how do you do that? What's the process?
So beautiful question, by the way. I love that question. The reason I love it is because I don't care if it's actually a reactive dog. I don't care if it's puppy training. I don't care if it's a dog that needs confidence building, if it's inferior to things. I don't care. It's irrelevant. It's a funny thing I do on the phone call. I'm going to circle back. I know I'm going to land the plane, I promise, in a second.
You're good. Take off.
I always I love that. I always have this little, like, script in my head. Like, hi, how are you? I'm Uncle Jess. They're like, oh, hi, I'm Samantha, whatever. I'm like, oh, my God, so tell me about a little monster, you know, and I want to know about their dog. I'm like, oh, how old is he? I don't give a shit.
Right.
Oh, what breed is he? I don't give a shit. Right? Like, oh, what's the problem? It doesn't matter.
Right.
I'm going to fix the dog.
Right.
I'm going to fix the dog. But I want them to tell me. Like, they tell me, oh, I got a Yorkie. I'm like, oh my God, it's one of my top three breeds. Bullshit. I say that if you say a Vizsla. I'll say that if you say a Caucasian. I'll say that if you say... I want you to feel comfortable with the interaction, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's one of my favorite dogs. It's a dog. It's one of my favorite dogs. It's a fucking dog. It doesn't matter. Once I do that and they let me in their home, I always start, you remember say boundaries a lot. Boundaries. Boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. What are boundaries in the definition of my head? I think it's really different than most people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I might be wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know. You could fucking call me out. I think if I create a boundary without commands and without the dog knowing what I want from it, it's self-discovering, that's a boundary. Right? Mm-hmm. So usually in an evaluation, the first thing I do is I'm like, oh, does he like treats? Of course he does, right? They're like, oh, yeah. I'm like, what's his favorite treat? Be like, oh, you know, dried chicken hearts. I'm like, cool. Bring him over. I'll give the dog a free chicken heart, and he'll get really excited for me. Then I'll tell him, I'm going to make a quick little mess here. I'll crush up some treats. And I'm gonna drop him. Is it okay if I poke him? I'm just gonna give him a little poke on his chest. Like, yeah, do whatever you gotta do, you know? You're not gonna stop him. He loves treats. I'm like, okay. So I'll drop him, and obviously the dog's gonna come 100 miles an hour, eat the treats off the floor. I'll lift up his little chin, I'll poke his little chest, I'll posture him, stand straight up. I'll apply what I call the talking dog method. The secret's not talking. Right? That's like my little spiel. That's what I call it. The talking dog method.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my little thing is, the secret is not talking.
Yeah.
Dogs don't talk.
Too much information.
Right? I think you say a speaking dog, right?
Yeah.
I call it talking dog because I'm a simpleton.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I like the term talking dog, right? Because how do dogs talk to each other? They don't use language. They don't know English, Spanish, Chinese, Russian. They don't know anything. What they do understand is touch as a medium, calm approaches, eye contact, facial expression, body posture, and presence.
Mm.
Right? So if I could stop the dog's fixation, oh my God, treat, ah! And he's coming after it, and I just lift up his little chin to get his little eye contact. I poke him. The poke's not supposed to hurt him. It's
right.
Supposed to redirect to the point of touch. What? Now when he looks at me, I could stand up. I could take space, because space communicates. So I'll take space. I'll stand straight up on purpose, because he's going to follow my hand after I poke him. Be like, what? I'm going to look at him. I call it dad eyes or mom eyes. Everybody has that. Everybody knows that their parents look at them.
You better not. Right? Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then when I do that, the dog's going to be like, scratch his little head.
Are you on the leash? Is the dog on the leash?
No. I do that for the client, not for me. So right. I do it off the lead for myself, because I'm...
Have you ever had a dog that just like goes around the poke?
100%. I call it the shark attack, right? Like they'll start sharking around you
because
they'll know they want the treat.
Yeah.
You're going to poke me. The concept is even if they eat the treat, they're already eating it. I never do fast movements. I walk over, doop, 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 doop. And then the dog's like, I need the dog to make the error 3 to 5 times consecutively.
So they go.
Dogs learn in my experience, my brain. Dogs learn in a sequence of 3 to 5 times of repetition. But you have to put them in the process of failure so they can be successful. I need them to have that ah moment. I call it the light bulb effect.
Yeah.
Right? Like old cartoons, like Wile E. Coyote, when he had an idea, he's like, ha.
Yeah.
But something positive has to happen, something negative has to happen, and by default, boom, light bulb. Right? Ah, associated value. It's literally counterintuitive approach. It's a human psychological approach used on children. I use it on dogs. I give them something they really want. And when they get it, they get a consequence through touch. If they leave it alone, they get exactly what they wanted by not getting it.
Right.
So if I don't get it, I get it.
Boundaries.
Boundaries, right? So it's also called impulse control. But I'm setting them up for failure on purpose because I want them to succeed. Once they get it, you can't even say it's training. You're imprinting in them.
Yeah.
Because you're communicating in dog terms, you could say, right? Because you're not talking. I'm not helping it. I don't believe that if I tell my dog, sit, stay, and then throw the food, you didn't create a boundary. You created a conditioned response to repetition and reward, and he already has an associated value to it. Put my tushy on the floor. Put my butt on the floor. I do it in the kitchen. I do it in the backyard. I do it on a walk. I do it in the car. So the sit kind of muddies the water of what the boundary is. Because if I don't say sit, he'll eat the treat.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't say sit, he'll run out the door. If I don't say sit, he'll jump on people. If I don't say sit. So the sit is like this artificial fake boundary, because the sit is the command. I don't want to say sit down, stay. I always use the term that I say, I don't care if the dog sits down, stays, or walks away. Don't eat my treats.
Right.
Don't run out my door. Don't jump on my guests. Now it's understanding, right? Because if he wants to jump on my guests and he holds, I release my guest to pet my dog. I never release my dog to pet my guests.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So kind of like I think you talk about stay like this, right?
Yeah.
Everyone forgets, and beautiful video, by the way. Everyone forgets to reward the position.
Yeah, yeah.
Stop rewarding when he comes to you.
Yeah.
That's why he keeps breaking. He's like, oh shit, he has a treat over there. I got to get there.
Yeah.
Right? Go back.
It's counterintuitive.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
So it's so cool because I'm sure you have this like epiphanies, right? With your clients where they're like, oh my God, it's so simple.
Yeah.
I didn't see it. It's right in front of me. What was I thinking?
Yeah.
But that's what you're there for, right? But that's why I always start. I don't care what the issue is. I don't care how old the dog is. I don't care the gender of the dog. I don't care the breed of the dog. I don't care anything. Boundaries, because that's my platform. That's my foundation.
Yeah.
If I don't have boundaries, he's never going to respect me. If the treat supersedes me, I can't really bribe with the treat.
Right.
I love treats. I'm not trying to create behaviors with a treat. I want to reward a behavior with a treat. Mm-hmm. So if he does it, he earns the treat. But I'm not going to use the treat to create the behavior.
Right.
The treat rewards the behavior. It doesn't create it.
Yep.
Right? Now, with puppies and stuff, you could lure, bribe a little bit. But in that midst of that, can I get him to come, sit, stay with the same treat that I'm rewarding him, but can I also throw them all around him and still get the same response for me?
Yeah.
The boundaries help you do that. Because he knows everything stems from what? The treat or from you? The treats come from you. The consequence comes from you. Good, bad, sad, happy, safe. Everything stems from you. You're the pillar of light. You're leading.
Yeah.
Without any words.
Yeah, and it also develops this, like I always say, like the micro and macro. So when somebody comes in for like leash reactivity or any problem, if you can create boundaries, you can communicate well.
Yes.
So a lot of people who have, that's what I start off with myself, is people who come in with any severity of behavioral issues, reactivity, aggression, whatever. I'll say, can you get your dog to sit for more than at all, right?
At all.
Right? Sit now. Okay, well, there's a problem. Can you get your dog to heal from here to here? Well, there's the problem, right? So it's these small little micro boundaries of can you get your dog to do anything? And that tells you your relationship status,
right?
Where you're like, so you go to somebody's house, you consult with them, and they say, here's the problems. And you go, okay, well, let's just see your dog's base, and they don't have any.
Right.
So it's an easy thing for dog trainers because we're like, this is an easy fix because you have nothing.
Right.
So, yeah, I like that. Who would you say your mentors are? Like, who are the people that you look for inspiration, whether now or in the past? Like, who are people?
So, ironically, when I started with my own dog. I was 15 years old. I saw a white long Colt German Shepherd at a pet shop.
He
was a puppy. He was like 5 months old. And I begged my dad. And he's like, no, I begged him. He got me the dog, right? And I tried to do my thing with him. I did a horrible job. I didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think when he was like about a year and a half, we hired a company. And they came out and I wanted to do protection training, right? I wanted to make him a police dog or canine. He had no potential to do it. Well, I didn't know. They stole our money, right? Charged my dad an arm and a leg. The dog didn't end up even sitting, right? It's just one of those things. But ironically, within that time, I made friends with one of the trainers. He's actually a real successful dog trainer. His name's Richard Hines, the Miami Dog Whisperer.
Cool.
Right? Super awesome. And he left that company. And he asked me, he's like, hey, dude, you want to like help me decoy? Like, you want to be a decoy? You want to take some bites? Like, I need to, and I'm like, fuck yeah. We were buddies. We started jiu-jitsu together. Like, we watched UFC together. Like, he's a super cool dude.
Cool.
And I kind of learned through him, like, storytelling. Like, I learned through stories. Like, I love stories. And he would tell me things, and I'd watch, and I was like, oh, man, that's cool. So he was, like, kind of like my mentor, unofficially. But, yeah, he was my mentor.
What age was that?
I was, like, 21.
Cool.
2021. And and he was big on Ivan. He loved Ivan, right? Cool. I always say his last name wrong. Balabano. Sorry, Ivan, my bad. But he was big. That's back in the day with Learberg and Ed Froland.
Froland, yeah.
Ed Froland, and he was selling all the DVDs back in the day. And my buddy would buy them all. And, like, we'd watch him, and it was cool. I'm not a big obedience guy. Like, I never got into, like, the sport obedience and, like, all the fancy stuff. Cause I've always been so inclined to the behavior. Like, he's more like, he's very fancy in his obedience, which is great. But I am a believer in Ivan. I think he's wonderful. Michael Ellis is great. I love listening to him or watching him.
Cool.
I actually watched a podcast with, don't be mad. Oh, my God, he's going to get mad that I don't remember his
name. I know?
Yeah, you had a podcast with him. Oh, my God, I can't believe it.
Will Atherton?
No, he has a goatee. He used to be a federal agent.
Oh, Larry Crone.
Larry Crone, sorry, Larry. Yes, Larry Crone, I watched that, and I liked listening to his perspective. Like, that was a good podcast, yeah. Right? I like listening to him. Cool. He gave kind of props to the same people. Because I feel like those are like the godfathers in a weird way, right? Like, they really...
Well, they're much... I mean, those guys have... I don't know much about Ivan. I trained and watched Michael for a long time. We have a lot of mutual friends. And, they have tons of experience. You know, they're much older than us. And so they started. And, you know, I think guys like us, when we start, there was... I mean, I always tell people there's not, I mean, nothing.
No, nothing. Nothing.
Like who can we learn except for finding people locally?
Correct. You know, and by the way, disclaimer, I don't know none of them. I've never worked with them.
Yeah, no, I know.
I have no relationship with them, unfortunately, but just.
Yeah, no.
Guys that I knew their names, right? Like, even I think Adam Katz had a book, right?
Yeah.
The Secrets to Dog Training, right? I never read the book, but I remember he was like the first guy to make like a website.
Yeah, cool.
Right? And he had like a marketing team and he did great.
Cool.
Right? But I don't know how good of a dog trainer he was, but that's irrelevant, right? If he helped people, he's a good dog trainer.
Yeah.
So most of the stuff I do is really made up. Right? Trial and error. I've been doing it so long. Process of elimination. I'm always trying to learn something new. And I'm always like, well, that didn't work with this dog. He reminds me a lot of Kato, right? Or he reminds me of Fifi, or he reminds me of Kiki, or whatever it is. And I'm like, I wonder if I do this, like I did with her, but I take this away.
Yeah.
I feel like he'll figure it out, and I'll do it, and boom, it worked. I'm like, holy shit, I pulled that out of my ass, but it worked.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm always trying to see what works for that dog. Interestingly enough, the one thing that's universal in my experience, right, with the dogs I've worked in my 25 years, boundaries always works, even for aggression. Because if I could have the owners apply it before we do dog reactivity, before we do human reactivity, before we do any type of nerve structure issues or anxiety, if they do that first, the dog already has an understanding of expectations. And if the dog understands what the expectations of the parents are, it becomes much easier to manage. Not saying you're going to fix it, but the management part and the process of meeting the goal becomes quicker, right? Because the dog's not guessing anymore. It knows what no means. I know this is super weird. I ask all my clients this. I ask them, do you just tell your dog no, or did you teach your dog what no meant? I know that's a weird question.
No, it's not.
Do you just say no, or did you teach it? Did you give no substance and value and an understanding of the accountability behind no? Or do you just get frustrated? I call it the tea kettle effect, right? You get frustrated for the same behavior over and over. You get frustrated. And you blow up, right? The tea kettle whistles. And then the dog gets spooked, and then you're like, he knows he made me mad. I'm like, yeah, shit. You look like a psychopath. Of course, your body language changed, your energy changed, you're screaming, right? Be like, no, he knows what no means. I'm like, why don't you do me a favor? Tomorrow, because he's going to mess up anyways, tomorrow, when you get really aggravated with him, say, yes! I bet you he's going to act the same fucking way. He doesn't know the difference between no and yes. He's just reading you.
Yeah.
He's reading you, right? And people have a hard time with this because in evaluations, a lot of times I tell them, give me the treat. They're like, oh, he knows, sit down. And the dog doesn't know anything, right? With the treat, I'll say, Monday, and the dog will come. I'll say, Tuesday, it'll sit. I'll say, Wednesday, it'll down.
Right.
Then I'll do it consecutively. They're like, what? I'm like, yeah. He doesn't know what you're saying. He's working for the treat. He's not working for me. He's just following my hand, whatever the treat does. Whatever word I say, he already knows the habit and routine. Doesn't matter what you're saying. So that's I always challenge everybody to get the treat, move backwards, and say Monday. They're all going to come. Say Tuesday when you stop. They're going to sit. Say Wednesday when you put your hand down. They're going to down.
Right.
So letting people understand that making the word valuable is probably the most important thing, giving it substance and value, right? Because I feel like the boundary does that. Once you get the boundaries, when I say sit and he doesn't do it, and I just, because I poke and I hiss, right? Like Caesar.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody, like, it's very, very similar to Caesar, right? Caesar always pokes and hisses, which is fucking cool. I love it. The only thing different that I always tell people that I've never understood on his end, the breakdown of it. When I break it down, I always tell people the reason I hiss is because there's no emotional attachment to the sound. I don't care if you I don't care if you say New York. You can say whatever you want. There just can't be a no, right? So even like when I do little consults or like my little mini seminars, I always tell the group on three, say no as nicely as you can, right? And everybody feels really weird because no, right? Yeah, yeah. It's not natural. Yeah. No's anger, no's frustrated, no's confused, no's never nice. So as soon as we start interacting with our dog, I'm like, no, Fifi, hey, no. Like you change. Because we're emotional creatures. We have emotional attachment to words. We have nostalgia to smell, right? Like we have memory.
Yeah, yeah.
And our body has muscle memory to it. So as soon as you say no, even though you're not angry, I tell people all the time, you went out with your wife, you had a great dinner, you had two cocktails, beautiful night. You get home, the dog ripped something up, you're like, no! And immediately your night went to shit, right? But it's nice because there's no emotional attachment, just a sound. So when I poke and I hiss and I marry those two together, I'm gonna land the plane in a second. Now all of a sudden there's substance and value to the sound I'm saying. So my new no is shh. But they know if they don't listen to that, there's gonna be a poke behind it.
Yeah.
Because I gave it substance. Exactly what I just said, that's how I use the e-collar. A long distance poke, I tell people. Right?
Yep.
If I could ask the dog something and marry it with a sensation, not a correction, right? Because I have a weird concept with the e-collar. I think anything under 50 is stimulation. I think anything over 50 is consequential. Like, and if you play it right, they'll learn it real quick, right? And I know there's a lot of controversy with e-collars and blah, 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 blah. But I always tell people context matters, right?
For sure, yeah.
I use my example of Little League. You ever seen a Little League coach having a little girl steal third and he smacks her ass or smacks his little boy's butt? Is he mad at that little kid? Is he angry? Is he giving that kid consequence? Or is he motivating him?
Right.
Right? That touch could be double standard. It could be a consequential spank or it could be a motivational spank.
Yeah.
Like, just like when we do our dogs, go boy, and we're doing protection. Watch, go boy, go watch. And I'm smacking the shit out of him and he's like, ah, he's fucking feeding off of that shit, right?
Yeah.
But if he messes up and I'm like, shh, hey, he's like, oh shit, why are you mad? And I haven't even touched him. My sons are the same way. I have a 20-year-old, 18-year-old, and a 10-year-old. Those are my boys. And I have 7 and 8-year-old daughters. My boys are bigger than me. They're big son of bitches, right?
And they're bigger than you.
Yeah, they're big dudes. And they're beautiful boys, right? My big guy's in the army. My 18-year-old leaves his army next month. And we roughhouse sometimes, right? And every once in a while, I got to remind them the old bull still got it. You know what I mean? I still got it, baby. So yeah. We'll be roughhousing, and I'll give them a little extra juice on something, and I'll get them. And it's really cute, right? Because we'll be like, oh, Dad, oh, you got. And there'll be like a happy tear. Like, you got me. I'm like, that's right. I got you, motherfucker. Mm-hmm. Right? And they're fine. We're laughing it off.
Yeah.
If they mess up, even as men, and I'm like, hey, Boba, how many times haven't I told you that I don't remember? He'll be like, hey, Dad, I'm sorry. Like, oh, huh. And it looks like I'm going to beat the shit out of him. But I haven't touched them.
Right.
Right? So that context matters. The energy, the eye contact, the facial expression, the situation. So I could play fight with him and hurt him like a man and he could laugh it off. I don't have to touch him to make a point that, hey, I don't appreciate this.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, you don't have to be physical sometimes.
Right.
But the physical also helps identify things, for especially for dogs, right? Sorry that we're rambling into so many different subjects, but
okay.
It's kind of like I always tell people, why do I poke? It's my way of biting a dog, right? It's touch as a medium, right? Touch to communicate. What does mom do when they're 4 weeks old and they have those little vampire teeth and they want to suckle at her teats? She's like, no more milk. And she starts beating the shit out of everybody, thrashing them like, get away. And the little piranha's still coming. And she's biting the shit out of them. No, 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 back away. And they're like, ah, mom, milk, 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 milk. That's the first incorporation of social structures.
Yeah.
Right? That's when they learn no.
Yeah, that's when teaching it. First time they probably get corrected.
They get bit. Exactly. Yeah. That's social structure. That's yes and no. And ironically, in my theory, dogs don't learn through positive reinforcement. Like I always say, the lack of bite is right. Right? If they're getting bit, they did something wrong. If they're not getting bit, they did something right. They don't teach in a positive way. They only teach through touch being negative. And if you're not getting touched, you're doing everything right so far, so the lack of bite is right.
That's positive reinforcement, yeah.
Right? Because they don't bring dead squirrels to each other. Hey, Tom, nice fucking workout today. There you go, buddy. Here's a squirrel. They don't do that, right? So it's a weird concept because they're primitive subspecies, right? So the way they interact is so cool to me because obviously they have axis skin, they have fur, they have armor almost. Like our T-shirt would be the axis skin. A lot of times, we've seen dog fights, I'm sure, and a lot of times a lot of saliva, a lot of noise. It looks like two Tasmanian devils. But there's no blood.
Right.
Because that's what that little armor's for. Right? They're made to be bit. And it's weird for me because I'm from Florida. And one of my favorite trees, I have a green thumb. Like, I love trees and everything and plants. Cool. Like, my favorite, thorn bush is a bougainvillea bush. It's like that. It's a weird thorn bush with, like, paper flowers. And they're beautiful. It's, like, vibrant purples and pinks and white. They're gorgeous. And if you throw a softball in there or a tennis ball, every dog in the world will jump in, come out, and not have a scratch on them. You walk by that thorn bush, because we're not primitive,
right?
Right. We don't have that armor. We don't have fur coat. We don't have access skin. So the touch you feel, or the interpretation of your emotional gauge on what hurts, right? Because we know pain is subjective. What hurts you doesn't hurt me. What makes you happy doesn't make me happy. What makes you sad doesn't make me happy. Make me sad. Everything is subjective, right? And I love the quote from Jurassic World when the main biologist is talking about. Oh, you created a monster. He's like, monster's a relative term. To a canary, a cat is a monster. I love that.
Yeah.
Right? And then we have these little monsters in our house.
Yeah, right.
Because everything, like, and I get it. I love empathy. I love sympathy. I love that. But I think when anything in an axis is bad, it's kind of Jordan Peterson talks about the devouring mother effect. I feel like that's a real thing with pet parents.
Yeah.
Right? Like we pity them so much and we empathize with them so much that we rather keep them locked up in their, I don't want to use the word misery, but in their flaws. Right? Like we find purpose in being there for them.
Yep.
Right? Oh, he's scared. He has separation anxiety. I can't go to work. He needs me. Mm-hmm. It's like an empty nester thing. That's why a lot of my clients that are older, they're like fucking seven dogs. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Yeah, their kids are grown. Their grandkids are grown. They have no purpose. They have no meaning.
Just keep getting dogs.
They keep getting dogs because they feel needed and wanted and desired and they feel a sense of purpose. And I love that. That's great. Good. But make sure you're also giving the dog meaning and purpose, right? Another question I ask all my clients, and it's kind of rhetorical, but I tell everybody, besides this being your dog and you loving your dog, besides that, what's your dog's purpose? What's the meaning to his existence? What does it wake up for in the morning? What are its duties and tasks? Right? And people are like, well, to eat and love. I'm like, no. You can't say love, and eating is not purpose. Like, what does it wake up for in the morning?
Yeah.
And it's a weird question because I have weird things I tell people, right? I always say, because They're kind of like modern-day slaves or prisoners to our wants, right? Because we never meet their needs, right? I always tell people, does your dog hunt for food? No? Okay. Does it reproduce? Oh, no, no, you neutered it. Okay. Does it travel territory? No, no, no. Okay, okay, okay. Does it warn off firebirds? No, no. Okay, 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 okay. So what's its purpose? Right? It can't prolong its species because it can't reproduce, right? It's not traveling territory of 2 blocks or a mile is not territory, right? They should have 30 square miles that they travel in a 3 month span, right? If you're talking about canine species, right? Yeah. We're not talking about modern day pets. I didn't have time today. I didn't have time. Oh, it was raining. And it's like, I always tell people, your wants don't matter to me when it comes to your dog's needs.
Yep.
Especially when you know it needs a stronger owner out of you. The good thing about our job, I think, is that we get to empower people. It's not really about the dog as much. Because once you start talking to people in that like mindset and their psychology changes, that my dog could be so much better if I'm so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've had revelations with your clients like that where you've built people or you've strengthened their relationship with their wives, with their children, with their dogs, with their fathers, with their employees. Because everything is, whether we want to believe alpha theory is real or not, we do know that pecking order is real. We do know that chain of command is real. Right? We do know that there is a system that nature by her, well, it's going to be redundant, but nature by nature has instilled on Mother Earth. Right? You can't have more queen bees than worker bees.
Right.
You can't. She doesn't allow it. Right? So you either have to become the queen bee or you have to let your dog take that role. And once you let people see that, oh my God, all his actions are actually meaningful. When he's bullying me for affection, he's muzzling under my arm, and I give in to him, then he's really shitty on the walk. I'm like, yeah, because in his head, his action dictated a reaction in you. And leadership's really simple, I always tell people. If my actions dictate a reaction in you, I'm leading. If your action dictates a reaction in me, you're leading. That's it. Mm. It doesn't matter how subtle it looks.
Easy, yeah.
Right? And I believe that affection is the number one form of bullying. Pet me, pet me, pet me, pet me, pet me. No? Hey, pet me, pet me. They jump on you. They bark in you, and you're like, ah, you silly Rufus. Okay, buddy. And then he gets off and walks away. Yeah, you better pet me when I tell you to shit.
Mm.
They don't ask. They demand. And a lot of people don't see that. Oh, he just wants my... I was going to call him anyways. Boundaries.
Yeah.
If I create that boundary, that limitation on, hey, I haven't called you yet. I haven't given you permission to eat the treats. I haven't given you permission to run out the door. I haven't given you permission to jump on my guests. I know it's weird because those are things that are undesirable to us. But dogs don't have a value system. They don't know what's right, wrong, good, or bad. They only understand their desired outcome. What's their desired outcome is the only thing that's positive, right? So when I start like rambling, I know I'm super into a rant. I always tell people, even reactive dogs, right, or aggressive dogs, it's positive for them to display a negative behavior that we see. They don't want the other dog around them. So if they display enough aggression and the dog keeps walking, they're like, cha-ching, I got my desired outcome. The aggression positively reinforced what they wanted.
Yeah, a lot of like insecure dogs will do things like that.
Yes.
They will say, I don't know what to do. They bark. And we go, oh, we got to get out of here. And they're like, oh, thank God.
Thank God. So I'm going to bark more often so I can get out of that situation, which is weird because we're trying to help them out of it.
Mm.
But I'm a strong believer that we break through things. We don't avoid them. The more we avoid, the more they're still there.
Yeah, for sure.
They're always there.
It's life.
It's a weird, but I think too, we were talking before we started, martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
I think martial arts teaches that a little bit, right? Or contact sports teaches you that a little bit. Or even like any team sports teaches you that, how to be accountable, right? Yeah. I always say the coach mentality is really interesting to me, right? Because a kid that misbehaves in school and at home won't misbehave at soccer practice, at softball practice, at volleyball, or at football.
Yeah.
Right? Because coach doesn't give free love. Or free acknowledgement.
Yeah, there's no... Yeah, you don't get... In sports and stuff, you don't get... Or in martial arts, you know, we're talking about jiu-jitsu.
Correct.
It's like, if you're not doing your homework and practicing, you're going to get crumbled. It's not going to be fun.
Correct.
Like, this sucks. Or just in general, like, I think martial arts or sports or like that voluntary adversity, you know, cold plunging, saunas, running, things that we don't want to do that we...
Correct.
That we know is good... So that's what's been super helpful for me the last couple of years is just been able to say, like, I don't want to wake up for jiu-jitsu at 5 a.m. I got stuff to do later. I'm tired. We think up of all these excuses. But the more you kind of train your brain. So to your point of kind of putting things off to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It comes back around.
It always comes back.
Always.
And
you have kids, so you have adult kids. So
you have babies right now.
I do.
You have babies. But it gets more interesting because you have to self-reflect and you have to evolve. Because if not, your kids don't.
Right? What's the biggest thing your kids have taught you, you'd say?
That's a good question. I'd say.
And I know it probably is stages.
But oh, no, there's crazy stages. One of my recent things that happened about 6 months ago, which is really cool to stay on topic, which is interesting. My 8-year-old, her name's Harley. And Harley's cool as shit. Like, she's a little dog trainer. Like, she likes the whole dog training thing. None of my kids like it. She's the only one that likes it.
Cool.
You know? And she's great. And it was a weird thing that came out of nowhere. We do something called competition. Competition is a coloring day. Like, and we color every day. So we'll color. Sometimes I whoop their ass because I'm a great colorer. I stay in the lines, baby. And then other times I let them win. Right? Like, so they could see the whole process. But they love to competition. So usually she'll be like, hey, Dad, are we doing competition later? I'm like, yeah, give me a second. Right? And she caught me like 6 months ago. And she goes, Daddy, you know what? She's smart, dude. She's like, you always say 1 second. And I always count. It's never 1 second. And in that moment, I learned so much, right? Not only for me as a father, me as a husband, me as a man, me as a dog trainer, me as a friend. I made up this thing that I believe that communication has three pillars, right? And I say that what we say, what we mean, and what's interpreted. And in that moment, I learned it, right? Or she taught me, better said. I didn't come up with it. She taught me that. Because... And we're going back to the no. Do you teach your dog no or do you say no? So this is a perfect example. I've never taught my daughter an implied meaning. I've never taught her what a figure of speech is. How is she supposed to fathom what 1 second means to me? What I say is give me 1 second. What I meant, give me 5 to 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
What she interpreted, my dad's a liar. Holy fucking shit.
So you think she was saying that, you say, yeah, you say 1 second, but...
You lie to me every day.
So it's a confidence thing, too. Because you said one thing that she interpreted actually 1 second, and it's never, obviously.
Because she only thinks in a literal format.
Right.
At that time, she was 7. She only thinks in a literal format. She has no concept of figures of speeches, implied meanings. She doesn't know critical thinking yet. Right. She doesn't know shit. She's a little baby. She's a little seed blossoming.
Yeah.
But I know what I mean.
Yeah, it's almost selfish, right?
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. Because you're not really
looking
into what the person's receiving, right? Communication is in the catch, not the throw. We're circling back. You see, we're landing a lot of things right now. And people do this with their dogs. A different species that doesn't use language. Can you imagine? That's my daughter. Same pedigree, same bloodline,
right. Same
household upbringing, religious contamination, like a belief system, everything. And we speak the same language. She speaks Spanish and English with me. And she still doesn't understand me, right? And I use this. It's funny because I use this a lot now with my clients. And I tell people, when you were younger, you too, Tom, when your mom or dad gave you advice or any elder, did you listen to everything 100%? You followed fucking directions perfectly, right?
No.
Everybody does. Nobody does. But they're speaking to you. They're giving you concrete evidence, scientific proof, life experience. This happened to me, buddy. Don't fall for the same trap. And you're like, yeah, but you're stupid, Dad. Right? And you still make those same mistakes. With all this information and help, imagine your dog. You're talking to it like if it was a human. And you have the expectations of it being able to process what you do. I did it with my daughter. And I see people do it every day with their dogs. So it's a real interesting thing how, going back to boundaries, the secret's not talking. Stop fucking talking to your dog. See if it understands you first.
Right.
Then add words. Right? Mm-hmm. Hold it accountable. It's okay. I hold my children accountable. I hold all of them accountable. But you know what? They fucking hold me accountable. And I encourage it.
Right.
Like the 1 second thing. Yeah, it's a weird thing, right? I had, when my sons were younger, so my two eldest sons, they're from another marriage. Like my recent wife is my last wife. It's not my second marriage. It's my last marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to write notes to the boys a lot, right? In the backpack, I'll just had a note.
That's nice.
I did that all the time. And I'd always tell them, like, question everything. Question your teachers when they tell you you did something wrong. Ask why, right? If you get in trouble for something you didn't do, express yourself. You know, question everything. Question me. Question the police. Question the Pope. Question God. Question everything. make sure you feel fulfilled with the answers you receive. Because I'm full of shit too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very adamant about teaching my children that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't fucking know everything. I'm a fucking big dummy idiot. You know what I mean? Like, I'm making a lot of shit up as we go. I think the older we get, the more we realize we're just all giant babies walking around.
Yeah,
everything's
sure.
Everything's fake. Everything's made up.
Yep.
Like, nothing's fucking real. We're just trying to do the best we can of what we got, right?
Yeah.
In Joe Rogan's words, like, we're all talking apes in a floating rock in infinite space.
Yeah.
Like, and we're the only ones that know that. No other animal knows that, just us, right. Which is fucking wild to me.
Yeah, right? For real, yeah.
It's wild. That's what separates us. I heard an animal psychologist guy, I'm not going to give him any credit, cause I don't remember his name. And he said something really fucking valuable. He goes, you know what the difference between humans and animals are? He goes, they don't look at the stars. They don't look up. Right? We do. We appreciate the nothingness. We appreciate the ocean. We appreciate the trees. We appreciate things in a different cognitive light. Animals won't look at the stars. He goes, they're looking at survival all day long. Even if you have a goldfish, which I always say that your dog is a goldfish in your house, right? You created this artificial, like, fishbowl, right? That those four walls are huge. You have AC. It's just a giant kennel. Just a giant kennel without purpose, right? You're not enough sometimes. You got to be willing to do a little extra. Like me, like this is a funny thing I always say. As a man, if I was single without kids, I don't care if I lived under a bridge, right? I'd have a garage with a car and a mattress. And I'd be happy as a pig in mud, right? The cool thing about pack order or alpha or family, whatever, tribe, whatever word you want to use, what's cool about it is that there's a weird synergy in it because the leader finds strength from the pack and the pack finds strength from the leader, right? That's what a dog pack is or a family is. My family doesn't know how much influence they have over me. I don't think we talk about this enough. My family has more influence than I have over them, even though, like, in my household or my upbringing, like, you know, I'm the provider, I'm the security blanket, I'm the protector. Like, my wife's great. She's a homemaker. She homeschools the girls. She cooks. She fucking caters to me and helps me with my emotional distress. She's a saint. But they don't see in the mornings when, like we were talking about, you don't want to get up and do the ice bath, right? It's too hard. There's mornings that it's too hard for me to wake up, right? Like, I don't want to go to work. I don't want to deal with people. I don't want to go through the rat race. But if I don't, who will? I got to put food on the table. I got to have a roof over our house, over our heads. I got to make sure my daughters are safe. I got to make sure my sons are strong. I got to make sure. If I don't do it, it all falls apart.
Mm.
I'm nothing without them.
Right.
They think they're nothing without me.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Which
yeah.
is a weird thing because they don't know. I'd be nobody if my purpose and my meaning is being a dad, is being a protector, is being a provider. It's being able to not care if, like those memes where you see, like, the dad has arrows all over his back, but protecting his daughter for life's, like, chaos. I love that shit. That's what I live for. That's my purpose. Not a dog trainer, not a behaviorist, not a friend, not none of that. I promise. My family.
Yeah.
Right? I always tell people that it's an interesting concept because you know how we think of superheroes? I always say I'm like a supervillain for my family. Because if, you know, anybody came down right now and said, hey, we're going to blow up planet Earth unless you sacrifice your family. I'm like, blow that motherfucker up. Blow it up. My family lives. Fuck it. Let everybody die. I'm a supervillain.
Yeah.
Because my family comes first.
Sure.
Right? And because if they're taken care of, I can take care of everybody that comes under. Right? It's like us. Yeah. If we don't have good mental health, if we're not stable, if we're not in a good headspace, we can't be good husbands. We can't be good fathers. We can't be good friends. We can't be good trainers. We can't be good anything. So
how do you balance all that? Like when you're, so training is, how long have you been training? Like
professionally, yeah. Probably like 15 years.
And how do you balance, obviously with all, what, five kids?
Five kids.
Mm-hmm. So three boys and two girls.
Yeah.
So how do you balance all that? Like with running a company and trying to help people and be there for your family. Like what's advice that you would give, I guess anybody, but dog trainers, because we feel it a lot too, because it's so much emotion. Like you said, we help marriages, we help families, we help, you know, some people are like, this is my best friend. And if you can't help, I don't know what's going to happen. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, it's different, right? We don't clock in and clock out like normal the norm, okay?
The norm. You're right. You don't have a 40-hour work week.
Right.
You don't double do an 8-to-5.
And you don't put on a suit and tie and clock in and clock out.
Correct.
It's always, especially when you're running your own company, right? You're always on.
Like always.
That's why I always found it interesting when I was starting my business. Like, weekends were just another opportunity for me. I'm like, you guys are off.
We're working. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to work? You know, it was always just like trying to get that thing done. But then your boss on Friday at 5 was like, all right, you guys got to stop and we'll hit it again Monday. And for somebody who loves what they do, mm-hmm. like dog trainers do typically, is we get to keep going.
Right.
And so with that being said, like, how do you balance 5 kids, a business, being a good husband?
Trying to be. A good dad, doing a good husband. Doing the best you can.
How do you balance all that? What's advice you can give people on that?
Well, that's why, so my wife used to work for JP Morgan or Chase. She used to be a bank manager. And we talked about it. I'm like, hey, I don't want like the school system raising the kids. I don't want strangers like our nannies.
Yeah.
Like and we both came to an agreement. Like, she's like, all right, fuck it. Like, I'll be at home mom. I'll homeschool. And we do like a lot of activities. Like, she bakes with the girls. We go out. We go fishing. Like, you can do whatever the fuck you want when you homeschool. It's really fucking great.
Are all the kids homeschooled?
The boys, no. The girls, yes.
Cool.
They were older, so it was different. But we did it with the girls. I think that helps a lot because it's not like I have to wake up at 5 to go drop them off and then be back by 2 to make sure we take them to soccer. Mm-hmm. So I eliminated a lot of the fluff because homeschooling is crazy, dude. 2 to 3 hours, you're done. A whole day's worth. My 7-year-old's been reading like, it was like 4, like crazy. Yeah, like, I'm about reading. Like, shit, I still can't read. I don't know how to read or fucking write. I'm just old enough that I remember the words. You know what I mean? I swear to God. I just know a lot of sight words. Like, it's incredible. And the bonding, like, is just, it's awesome. So that helps a lot. The homeschooling was a real big deal to us. I think also including the family in our work, which you do a great job of that. Including the family, because what happens is, and this is a weird reality that I went through. The kids go to school by 7. They wake up at 5:30. They get dressed. They pretend to eat breakfast. They're on the school bus or you drop them off. They're in school for 8 hours. They're in after school for 2 hours. They're in extracurricular for 2 hours. They come home, they do homework, they go to sleep. I never get to be dad.
Yeah.
I don't parent them. There's no fucking parenting. And you're so fucking sick of your boss or your coworker or this or that or the coming home and the traffic and this guy fucking cut me off. And fuck, by the time I come home, I want 5 minutes to fucking just collect my thoughts. Jesus Christ. Right? So then anything my wife says or the kids do, I'm already fucking aggravated. But they're aggravated too because they've been listening to the teacher telling them to shut up and sit down and dip. And it's just like fucking chaos all day for everybody. So by the time you come home, you don't enjoy each other. You don't. At least I didn't. How about that? I didn't enjoy the lifestyle we were leading. Right? So I also have the flexibility of creating my own schedule. Right? I work when I want to work. I take the clients on that I want. I'm very selective about my clients. Like, lucky for me, right? And I work like probably like 4 days a week solid. And it's wonderful, right? I get to take my daughter fishing. My son's coming down now July 4th from Italy because he's stationed in Italy. So we're going to spend 2 weeks together. And I'll take 2 weeks off, right? And I'll just enjoy my family. I get to enjoy my wife. Hey, so where I live, I'm from Miami, Florida. I live like 2 hours away from Miami now because it's just more cost effective with so many children.
Yeah, sure.
Right? So I drive 2 hours. 4 days a week to Miami. I work all day and then I drive 2 hours back home.
So that's where all your clients are?
Yeah, I would say like 90% of my hub is Miami.
Makes sense.
And it's just easy. But guess what? The girls come with me. My wife comes with me. The kids come. And then we have lunch in the middle of the day. We'll go fishing between sessions.
It's great.
That's how I managed it. I included the family. And I think you talked about this with Larry. Mm-hmm. About how you take your whole family on workations, right? Like, if we're going to go to Australia, I'm taking the fucking family.
Yeah.
That's how you mitigate it. That's how you manage it. That's how you make it better. Because I think that's more parenting, more productive, and more family bonding than an 8-to-5, the kids going to school, me seeing them on the weekends, but on the weekends, I got to mow the lawn, I got to take it to the car for an oil change, I got to fucking pressure the roof, blah, blah, blah. You're never parenting.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. I live in a cul-de-sac, and nice. I see that, like, in the morning when I'm letting the dogs out. Mm-hmm. And there's a special time for the family to kind of wake up, and you know, my son, like, loves Bob Marley. He's almost 3.
Oh, I love him.
And he'll ask Alexa, like, Alexa, blah, blah. And so we'll just sit there, and we'll just usually just – fresh fruit and just good vibes, like really setting the tone, you know, and just really enjoying the morning together. Because once the day starts, it's like
chaos.
You know, it's like the engine. Yeah. So I sometimes when I let the dogs out in the morning, I just kind of see all that, right? And it's inevitable that, you know, kids, because that's something that my wife and I have been talking about is homeschooling, and the the options now are much different. Like you were saying, maybe for your boys, it was different
right.
Like homeschooling. Because even when I was in high school, I graduated in 2007, 2008.
Okay.
And when you were homeschooled at that time, it was like you were kind of an outsider.
Yes.
And now it's different. Like there's communities and groups. There's tons of because my professor, my jiu-jitsu professor,
okay,
who owns the academy, his kids are homeschooled because nice. they do like a midday kids thing for just for homeschoolers.
Oh wow, okay.
So I was asking him, I'm like, how does homeschooling work around here, you know? And he's like, well, it's actually really nice to what you were saying is you know, there's, because I was like, how do they do sports, and like how does sports work? He goes, my kid plays all sports, baseball, football, jiu-jitsu, everything. He's like, you just sign them up and you find different things. They don't play for the school obviously, but
right, but you still have all the extracurriculars, right?
Exactly.
Like all those, like the private camps.
Yep.
Yeah,
you just sign them up, and he was just saying, and then you do, because that's what he was saying. It's like, you, to your point, it's exactly that. As he said, their kids, and this is subjective, I'm sure. I'm sure there's better schools than others, but so they were saying is like a lot of kids are just told to shut up and sit down. Don't ask questions. Don't question anything, and just go with the flow. And some kids are going to ride that wave, and they're going to do fine. There's kids like me who went into special ed and had to be removed from things, and like, because I'm just like, what? I was just ADD, just asking questions about everything, and I didn't follow the norm. So I was always pushed out because it was like, Tom, just, you know, and all that stuff. So it's interesting, but I think about that all the time, how grateful I am for the opportunity to do what I'm doing, because I see all my neighbors around the same, it's like a movie,
right?
At the same time, they get out in their suits and they get into their cars and they're all going to the bus stop.
Right.
And I'm just sitting there and my dogs are pooping and I'm in my pajamas like, see ya.
Yeah. You know. Have a nice day.
It's hard, you know, like, so, you know, it's not an, I don't want to, because 90% of people who are listening and watching this are in that, and there's 100%. Nothing wrong with it.
No.
It's just, there's options out there, and it's a difficult path of choosing your own career. And so a lot of people that I work with, dog trainers especially, want to start a dog training career. They say, man, I love dogs. I love helping people with dogs. I have a gift for it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know how to start. So you were saying earlier that you have programs where you coach people through.
Yes. So one of my recent students, she had a jewelry company. She did behind the scenes, like management for like gyms.
Cool.
So she did a couple of things. And she actually, one of my clients trained her dog. She was working with a dog trainer already. It didn't work out. Started working with me. She loved it. And I had a trainer's course starting up, and she joined. I think she's been a dog trainer 6 months now, and she's a full-time dog trainer, making more money than she's ever made. How crazy, right?
Wow, good for her.
She's killing it, and she's wonderful. She's a great dog trainer.
What is your process in that? Like, do you do everything? Do you do, here's how to make a logo, here's how to do marketing?
I help with everything, right?
Cool.
But I'm not that techie, right? So
sure.
I'll tell people, like, I built my website on Wix, and I'll tell you to go on Wix. Now, actually, that student, Abby, she has her company name is The Better Dog with Abby.
Cool.
And she actually builds websites. I actually revamped my website for my company. And she's awesome. So I told her, man, you should now make a second company and do that while you dog train. Like, oh, my God, more streams of income as much as you can, because you're great at both. So why not? That's a beautiful thing about dog training, that if you're good at it, you're passionate about it, you like it, and you actually put forth what's needed, you will be successful. There's not enough dog trainers to train all the dogs that need help, right?
Never will be, yeah.
And there never will be. And it doesn't matter, again, like we talked about earlier, I don't care what style, what approach, just help people. Who gives a shit?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You want to use a clicker, use a clicker. You want to use a knee collar, use a knee collar. You want to do positive, only do positive. Only. You want to do balance, do balance. I don't give a shit. Make sure people are getting successful results. It's effective training, and they're like juicing the life out of them and their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what we should concentrate on. Not what you did right or what you did wrong, or you're stupid or that's abusive or this. Obviously, abuse is not good, but I think it's subjective. Like, I don't think a prong collar is abusive. I think a tool has a place. I don't think a knee collar is abusive. I think a tool has a place.
I read a...
tell me, please. I need to know.
I read this comment today. Sometimes the only comments I read in my social media ethos is YouTube, because they tend to be... Like, people who watch full-length videos tend to be more realistic and
they're invested too.
They're invested. Yes. They get context.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway, I watched this comment today. This lady was commenting. She was like, stop giving your dog so many boundaries. Let them. She was basically saying that not allowing your dogs to pee and poop in the house was cruel.
Yeah.
So she was saying, you should, she goes, I let my dog pee and poop in my bathroom because when she has to go, she has to go. I think it's cruel to make, and I'm thinking to myself, imagine all of us adults just start peeing on ourselves because our parents said it was yeah. cruel to hold it. So I was like,
yeah.
So it's subjective, for sure.
Subjective, and it's funny, right? Because if you take that same mindset, right? Because I love telling people, you know, like, you can't have your cake and you need it too, that whole expression. It's kind of like, okay, well, I think it's abusive to have a dog inside a house. I think it's abusive to subjective to that prison. I think it's abusive to have him on a leash. I think it's abusive to feed him fucking the same thing every day. I think it's abusive not to let him hunt. I think it's abusive not to let him go mark and fuck. I think it's abusive to not let him fight. Let's go on and on. Okay, let's go.
Like, what do you say to, like, as a dog trainer who, if, by the way, I'll just tell people
yeah.
who found me, the reason why I invited you on the podcast is because... Please. When Burley, my dog, was going through, and kind of still is going through his skin issues.
Yes.
You DM'd me this crazy concoction about 20 different ingredients, like.
Yeah, some medicinal mushrooms and some superfoods.
Yeah.
Correct.
A bunch of stuff.
Yes.
And I was like, well, that's interesting. And that's what, so anyway, so that's how I invited you on the podcast is because when he was going through that, I got tons of DMs, which was great. That's the beauty of the community of dogs yes. is people are really supportive. So when Burley was going through, and by the way, it ended up just being a low grade, what it was like a low grade, allergy. And then it turned into like, he scratched himself and then it turned into like an infection. And anyway, so anyway, things are better.
Great.
Which is good. But that's how I had you in the podcast. But obviously you create content, you put it on Instagram
yes.
and other platforms, I'm sure. Like how do you deal with, I feel like knowing you now for the last, you know, almost hour, I know what you're probably going to say, but how do you address that when somebody says, hey, you used a martingale collar on a dog and I think that's pretty abusive. Like, do you say anything?
I don't. So I'm also, it's weird, right? You have my own biases or my own belief systems, right? But I'm super open. Like, I love freedom of speech. I love freedom of thought. I love freedom of expression. I love all that, right? So if you want to talk shit, talk shit. I always, at the beginning of answering comments in the past, I would try to educate. But people just aren't, they're not saying what they're saying to be educated. They're saying what they're saying to attack. So it becomes hard, right? So I have this four pillar. I have a lot of weird things. But I believe in four things, right? Kill with kindness. Everybody knows that one, right? Counter with intellect, right? So that's why I try to educate, right? But you also have to ignore the ignorant. And when all else fails, I reserve the right to whoop your ass. Bam! You know, that's how I live my life. I swear to God. Those are my four rules.
Say the last one again. If all else fails, I have the right to kick your ass.
I have the right to... I reserve the right to whoop your ass. Right?
Okay.
But that's because, and this is great, right?
Yeah.
In anything, and I like, we're talking about dogs. Behaviors are interesting in humans and dogs. And I always like to refer to it to like fires. Fire is funny to me, right? Because a fire doesn't matter. What matters is what ignited the fire, right? So how do we extinguish fires? Everybody always thinks water, right? But if you have a grease fire, don't use water. It amplifies
yeah, yeah.
it,
yeah.
Right? But people just see fire, fire, fire.
I did that before,
right?
So not good.
Oh no! But when you see fire, you automatically think water,
of course,
right?
Put it out.
I never look at fires. What ignited it? And that's what behavior is, kind of, right? What created the behavior? What
the
was
root,
the root
yeah.
cause?
Yeah.
Right. So if it's an electrical fire, you don't use water either. If it's a grease fire, you don't use water either. Look how ironic! But we think water for fires, right?
Yeah.
Some fires need foam. Some fires need sand. Some fires need fire. Sometimes you have to fight a fire with fire, right? So this is where you have to be able to articulate the student. We're circling back, right? Who am I teaching? How do they learn, right? Are they auditory, visual, hands-on, multitude of all three? How do dogs learn? Are they a reward dog? Are they a touch dog, a praise dog? Do they need a little bit of leash pressure? Do they need a correction? Do they need to be subsided? Do they need to be aroused? What needs to happen? Do they need to be praised? Do they need to be encouraged? It all matters. Mm. That matters. That context matters, right? So, going back real quick, I didn't tell you. I wasn't going to tell you, but I'll tell you now. Fuck it, because you brought up all the medicinal stuff. I don't want to forget. I know you're a We Feed Raw guy, and We Feed Raw is cool as shit. I love all the big names, right? Like fucking Farmer's Dog, Viva, We Feed Raw. I think everyone's great. Just like for dog training, you know how I don't care what you do? I don't care what you feed your dog. You feed kibble if you want. Just make sure it's healthy for them. You feed raw, you could DIY it. Like, it doesn't matter. Make sure it's good for them. I have a raw dog food company. Those are some of my ingredients. Because I add superfoods and medicinal mushrooms to the food already. So you don't have to go through the guesswork of adding, oh, I need turmeric. Oh, I need moringa. Oh, I need to add ginger.
All right. How'd you learn all that? Because that's why I had you on the podcast, because you sent me all that stuff. I was like, I got to have this guy on. And I didn't know anything else about you outside of that. I was like, that sounds interesting.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you so much.
So
what happened is, since I've been dog training for so long, it's kind of like you. People ask you who your vet is. What do you feed? What's the best leash? What shoes do you wear when you train? You know, what's the best deodorant?
Yeah.
Like, it's just interesting, right? Yeah. How you become like this hub of information.
Yeah, for sure.
It's cool. It's a big responsibility, to be honest.
For sure. Right? For sure.
So I've been telling people how to DIY raw for a long time.
How long?
Man, like 10 years, 12 years.
Yeah.
And I tell people, man, you could just go to Walmart.
But how'd you start? Like, was there like a dog that had skin issues, or were you like, what was the epiphany of you going, I'm going to not do this
perfect
to this?
I'm allergic to dogs.
Okay.
The irony of it, right? I'm allergic to dogs. Their dander kills me. The hair kills me. Their saliva kills me. So my first dog was a German Shepherd.
Interesting.
I've had, my favorite breed is actually a Caucasian mountain dogs, like Caucasian or Vartkas. Mm-hmm. They're hairy beasts.
This is a big Russian.
Yeah, the Russian bear dogs.
Yeah.
They're hairy. They're like Tibetan Mastiffs pretty much.
Yeah. Right?
They're just big, and I can't even pet them. Right? Because the dander's too much. There's too much hair in the house. Like, I just can't do it. So just like us, if you eat clean, you're clean.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? If the dog eats clean, it's clean. On top of that, when you DIY, ironically, at least back in the day, it's almost cheaper to go raw, DIYing it yourself, than fitting anything else.
Just more work.
It's a lot of work. Yeah. It's not more work. It's a lot of work. Like, we don't meal prep for ourselves. There's meal prep companies for humans.
Yeah.
Because we don't have enough time. There's not enough hours in the day.
Correct.
That's why all these companies, We Feed Raw, is so great. Because they do all the guesswork for you. You don't have to fucking worry. Like, just order, it ships, bam. I feed the dog, everything's done. Right? It's just the way to go. So a lot of people back when I started, there weren't any raw dog food companies. Like, it didn't exist. So what people were doing is kibble, but the dog had allergies. The dog was breaking out. It was allergic to chicken. It's having hot spots everywhere. It's whatever it may be. So I would tell people, hey, go buy ground beef. What's ground beef? Just back in the day, like, what's ground beef? $1 a pound? I'm like, go buy ground beef. Add this, you know, add some chicken hearts. Chicken hearts back in the day used to cost 20 cents. You know what I mean? It didn't cost anything. So I'd give them a couple of organs, a couple of secreting organs, and some muscles, right? I'm like, and if you want to do some bone, add some chicken quarters, right? Make it easy. Chicken quarters are super. Even to today, just so everybody knows, if you go to Walmart, a chicken quarter, a 10-pound bag of chicken quarters is going to cost you $6.50. 10 pounds.
Wow.
Like, super cheap.
Yeah, it is.
Right? So you could give it to them. I still give that as treats for my dogs. I'll just give them a whole chicken quarter. I let them gnaw on it, break the bones, crunch it up. They love it, right? But then also, you know, we have our recipe. We grind everything. We add all the chicken hearts, chicken gizzards, chicken livers, all our other cool ingredients, or whatever formula we have. And what ended up happening is people are like, oh, my God, he stopped shedding like by 30% in like a month. I'm like, yeah. If you eat healthy and you get nutritional, like you meet all your nutrition, your body doesn't need to like flip out. The dog's the same thing. If you meet the amount of omegas it needs, the amount of protein, the amount of nutrients, but also the minerals. People forget about that, right? Mm. You need to add minerals to everything.
Like us.
Yeah. That's why we supplement so much.
Yeah, hell
right? That's
yeah.
That's why I'm a supplement fanatic, right?
Dude, I went to the GP the other day for a physical, and he's like, so what supplements are you on? I'm like, 20 minutes later, he's like,
yeah.
He's like, hold on, because he's looking them up, because he has to like scroll.
Okay.
You know, and he's got to scroll to find it on his thing. And he's like, we don't have half this stuff. I'm like, yeah, well,
but
you will.
Do you want to hear the funny thing? That list I sent you, I call it my earth smoothie. That's what I drink every morning. Because it's not human grade organic. Mm. I drink the same thing that's in the formula for the dogs.
What
the
do you
same exact thing.
Blend it with fruit, or you just...
So I used to, add like blueberries or strawberry, like make it like a smoothie.
Yeah.
I've gotten lazier. And now I just add coconut water and I put all that earth in there. And I just fucking whisk it real quick and I just fucking throw it back.
Nice.
It's just, my wife's always like, why do you torture yourself? I'm like, it's faster.
Does it give you energy?
It just, like, I'm a fucking weirdo. I wake up like this and I go to sleep like this, by the way. Like, I'm always like this, like 100 miles an hour. Plus, I drink like 10 Cuban coffees a day.
Wow.
Yeah, but besides that, it keeps me leveled. I don't know how, like, there's no, I have a lot of brain fog at 42.
Brain fog. So, like, do you any, when you supplement, do you do nootropics and stuff like that?
I do a lot of, Jesus Christ, I'm losing my brain fog, right? I took it today before I got here, Alpha Brain, Jesus Christ, I couldn't remember the name of it for the life of me. I take Alpha Brain because it helps.
Yeah, it does help.
But like the lion's mane, the turkey tail helps a lot too.
Yeah.
So like I add that to it. So
I do this stuff called, I do Alpha Brain.
Okay.
I do three of those. It says take two, but I do three.
Good.
And then I do Mindful. Oh shit! What's it called? Mindful. It's this thing I heard on this podcast. But for anybody out there, because I struggle. I wish I could drink coffee.
Okay.
I can't drink it anymore. I can. It just gives me super anxiety now. So it will. Like I love coffee. Mm-hmm. Like when I tell people, like people are like, what a buzzkill. Like no coffee. I'm like, I love coffee. I love the smell of it. I love the taste of it. I love the ritual of it. And I still drink a little bit of it. I just drink it with it's called mud water. So it's like it's a chai blend. So here it is. Here's the stuff I take every day. That's Magic Mind.
Magic Mind. I'll look it up.
So it's Magic Mind Energy, and so it's ashwagandha. Vitamin B12, vitamin C. It's a little bit of matcha and some mushrooms. And it's just a little shot like this.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's like a little bang. But if you're used to 10 Cuban coffees, you almost need to jumpstart your day with that. that would put you to sleep. Because that's the thing is I started weaning off caffeine because I was like even the other day, Abby and I were filming this. We were filming some stuff for like Instagram or something. And I just kept tripping over myself. I'm like, I get so frustrated when I drink caffeine. I get super frustrated and agitated really quick when I'm trying to do something. Like you would think it'd have the opposite effect. But today we filmed a course beautifully. Like Abby was like, "What is wrong with you today?" She's like, "You were like," and it's because I did three Alpha Brains, which Onnit is the company for people who are listening. They want to try it. Yep. And it has no caffeine in it. They actually have another one. So interesting enough, like the older I've gotten, I'm 36 mm-hmm. now, but I've just been really auditing like what makes me feel a certain way, right? Like super healthy to like self-regulate, self-audit, like, okay, that made me feel this way. This made me feel this way. That's why I've been supplementing so much, really into like biohacking and health, which is why I got into raw food with dogs.
Same
thing. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I did Onnit, which is the company, and they make Alpha Brain, and I started doing that. And then they have the Alpha Brain black label.
Black, yes.
So I took that because I'm like, oh, more expensive, must be better. Took it, and all of a sudden I'm like, whoa. I was like, I feel something different. I don't like this. Looked in it, caffeine. And I'm like, damn. So it's true. Like I had my own coffee, No Bad Dogs coffee, and I love coffee. But and I'll still drink it occasionally. Mm-hmm. There's certain times when I can get it, like seminars. I can drink coffee in the morning and I can just, because I'm pumping through the day for 8 hours, like nonstop. But anyway, so I'm really sensitive to that, but I've been taking the Mindful and I've been taking the Onnit every now and then. It's been
funny you say the anxiety thing because my anxiety comes at night.
Yeah, of course, because you're all day, you're clocking because mm-hmm. you got all that caffeine, and then at night you have nothing to do because you're trying to sleep, and now your brain's like.
But that weird mix of the mushrooms and the superfoods, I sleep like a baby now compared to what I slept
good
like 8 months ago.
You track your sleep?
No, I don't.
Be nice to know.
Yeah,
I've been tracking my sleep. I have an Oura ring.
Oh, nice.
So I got Oura rings when I travel a lot. I like check in, like,
wow,
I feel great. What did I do? Or I don't feel great. Or how did I sleep? What was my heart rate? What was my, you know, whatever. Anyway, so the raw food thing. So do you distribute yourself?
So we manufacture and distribute ourselves.
I was like, is this an alarm? Is there an alarm going off?
My bad. So we manufacture everything in-house for small batch. It's just a very small company. I actually made it for my clients.
That's cool.
Because they will try it for a week or two, and they're like, dude, it's great.
What do you put in it?
So
what's your
only batch? Have two formulas right now.
Cool.
We have our chicken formula, which is literally chicken quarters, like skin on, bone on, chicken hearts, chicken gizzards, chicken livers, And then we add our plus. The plus is going to be all our superfoods from moringa, turmeric, ginger, wheatgrass, the medicinal mushroom mix, which is everything from, oh my God, red changa, shiitake, lion's mane, turkey tail. It's six different mushrooms. Wow. Everything's organic. Everything's human grade. And then a little bit of coconut oil and flaxseed in there as well.
Sounds great.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And we've only had like awesome results.
Sounds great.
One of the person I was just calling me, apologies, actually her 12-year-old husky, allergic to chicken, right? He's had allergies all his life. Like he does those shots monthly, like because he's just allergic to everything. He's on the chicken formula and no more allergies, which is crazy. I'm not saying it's the food or whatever things people are thinking, but a lot of times it's nutrition.
Yeah.
Right? And if you get the nutrition, I don't care where you get it from. If you get the training, I don't care where you get it from. Get it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, fucking get it. Like,
what's your other formula?
Right? My other formula is called Modern Mix, and we mix the beef with the chicken. So yeah. We do chicken quarters, just a way smaller percentage, and then the next ingredient's beef heart, then we do chicken gizzard and beef liver. So we substitute the two, so we mix them in there. And then we have the plus, which is all the same. All my formulas have plus, which is plus means plus all the superfoods and medicinal mushrooms. The mix also has, because I wanted to mimic barf, because people have, there's so many different like raw formulas or like what models is what they're called, right? So you have prey model, you have Frankenstein prey, you have barf, you have a mix of everything. Like it gets so overly complicated that I'm like, phew. Like even for me, it's too much. You know what I mean? You do a course online and you're like, dude, I forgot everything already.
Yeah.
It's so much information. Like KISS, right? Keep it simple, stupid.
That's right.
So our chicken formula is prey-based, like the prey model. It's just like, you know, beak to feet, right? Which we don't do beaks and feet and all that stuff. We keep it really simple for people. The modern mix is supposed to mimic barf because we add carrots, green beans, strawberries, and blueberries, right? In that one.
So are they like dried or?
So they're actually frozen. So I do everything. Everything has to be flash frozen because with studies now, it shows that flash frozen fruits and vegetables actually hold way more nutritional value than fresh. So blah, blah, blah. Is it right? Is it wrong? I don't know. The dogs are doing great on it. And that's all that matters. We only work in Florida. We do free shipping out of Florida.
Damn, dude. I was going to say.
Yeah.
Ship me up.
I'll ship you something. Of course. I would love for you to try it. But
sounds great.
I'm a weird person, right? Like, I'm a horrible businessman. I just happen to love what I do. And I think my thing.
But don't you think a lot of dog trainers I talk to are like that? They're good. So there's different walks of life. There's mathematicians, there's historians, there's athletes, there's rappers,
right.
there's different types of musicians, there's chefs, and I think it's the same thing with dog trainers. Is a lot of us dog trainers really, like, we're good with dogs, we like dogs, so we're animal people.
Right.
We have this communication, we have this innate ability, this give and take,
right,
that sort of thing. And a lot of times we have a hard time with the business end. We have a hard time with people, you know?
Right.
So but I always tell people, like, if you're the best dog person in the world and you can get a dog to join a circus by doing this, it's cool, but if you can't teach other people how to do it, it only stays with you.
Correct.
So I think a lot of dog trainers are like that. I hear that a lot. They're like, I'm not a good business person. Like, yeah, but you figure it out.
So circling back to what I tell my students, right? Because you brought something up that's really cool. One of the main things I work with dog trainers, and ironically, my Instagram, I get more dog trainers out of it than clients.
Okay.
Right?
So they come to you to become dog trainers, you mean?
No, they're already active dog trainers. They just want to pick my brain.
Got it.
Say, like, I hate using the word mentor because I think I'm a fucking moron and I shouldn't be a mentor to anybody. But I think that's what the draw is, because I love people. And I could honestly say, everybody knows this, I'm team human. I love dogs with all my life. But I think dogs are great because they're owned by humans. Mm. Not they wouldn't be as good. Right? Because we have this companionship, we have this weird relationship with them, right? But it all stems from us.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't help the human, the dog dies, right?
Mm.
Like the dog fails. The dog doesn't survive. It doesn't live a good life. It gets put down, or it gets rehomed, or it gets thrown away, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
The human is the key, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
Mm.
You have to. That's what a lot of professionals ask me about. Because my favorite thing, I love communication. I love talking shit. I love keeping it casual. Like what I sent you, right? Like, I'm fucking casual. I'm definitely not fucking PC. Like, I say the wrong thing a lot. And I'm okay with it. And how do I deal with people talking shit? I usually heart stuff a lot. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Because luckily, I'm old enough to know that, and this is crazy, right? Like, opinions don't matter to me.
Good.
Like, I'm really good about that, right? You know whose opinion fucking devastates me? My wife's, my daughter's, and my son's.
Your daughter who says 1 second isn't actually 1 second,
yeah, Dad. That devastated me. I'm like, holy shit, I'm a shitty dad. What the fuck am I doing? Yeah. I'm not doing it right. I have to that's be good. Better. I have to be that's conscious, good. Right?
Yeah, it's good. It matters.
It matters. But it also enlightens me how to be better with a dog. It helps me better with the client, with the owner. So my forte is actually owner communication. I think I'm better at training with people than I am training with dogs.
Yeah.
And then it highlights that I'm a good dog trainer.
Hmm.
Right? So it's all self-proclaimed behaviors, right? So I love saying that I specialize in behavior.
Sure.
But not dog behavior. I never say dog behavior. I don't think anything I promote says that I'm a dog trainer. I'm your dog's favorite uncle. Mm-hmm. I'm Uncle Jess. I never say I'm a dog trainer. Because I'm not. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
I'm your dog's favorite uncle.
Yeah.
It's fucking weird.
Well, that's your Instagram name.
Yeah, that's my Instagram. That's my company name. That's everything. Everything's your dog's favorite uncle or Uncle Jess. That's how everybody knows me, right? So it comes down to, like what you were saying, most dog trainers have a hard time communicating with the owners.
Yeah.
They can make the dog sing, dance, make coffee, and do laundry, but they can't help the owner do it. They can't relay the information because communication is in the catch, not the throw. Doesn't matter how fucking smart you are. Doesn't matter how right you are. If they don't understand what you're saying, you're wrong by default.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
What
would you say to dog owners that are listening right now? It's like a final message. What would you say to them? What would you say?
Yeah. So the easiest thing to take away is stop overcomplicating things. Stop looking for what to add to your dog training or to the dog relationship. Start taking stuff away. Keep it simple, right? And don't be scared to try things that you don't agree with or listen to someone that you don't necessarily think that aligns with you. I think that's okay. Because then you could kind of see, like, yeah, you know what? They are full of shit. Or, you know what? He's half full of shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? Hence, we'll go back to, if everything you've tried already hasn't worked, the only thing that's going to work is something you haven't tried.
Right.
Because all these dog owners, I'm sure they use a lot of love. I'm sure they use a lot of treats. I'm sure they use a lot of kisses. And the dog's still not listening.
Mm.
Not saying you can't do that. I encourage you to do it 10 times over. But with purpose.
Mm.
Make it meaningful. Make them earn it. Make there be substance and value. I know you want to wrap it up, but I want to say this about the coach thing.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about, the coach. Just circle back for a second. It's interesting to me that coaches don't give acknowledgement, love, or recognition. But if you have a good practice and you're in the locker room, coach always finds a way to come in, be like, hey, Tommy, nice workout there, bud. And just walk away. And as soon as he says that in front of your peers, you're like, what the fuck? I'm the man.
Yeah.
But he didn't give you a cookie. He didn't throw a parade for you. He gave you acknowledgement with real substance. Mm. And that was more valuable than, this is a weird example, but I would say than grandma baking me cookies. Because if I go to the soccer game, grandma bakes me cookies. Mm. If I don't go to the soccer game, grandma bakes me cookies.
Right.
And if I win the soccer game, she bakes cookies. And if I lose the soccer game, she bakes cookies. Doesn't matter what I do, I'm still going to get the cookie. The cookie doesn't really have value. It just has nostalgia.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I get it.
Coach doesn't bake you cookies, but him telling you, nice workout there today, held more value than the cookie, which is wild to me.
Yeah, I love that.
Right? So start, like, be meaningful. Be purposeful. Like, do things that matter to you, matter to your dog, matter to your family, because it's all in one. It's a pack. Pack interprets into family in human terms. Like, you're all one. Do what you would do for your kids. Like, that's it.
Love that.
I guess. So thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to wrap it up or not.
Uncle Jesse, my man, where can people find you? Tell people, social media, websites.
So social media is very easy. Your dog's favorite uncle. Instagram, that is social media. But website's your dog's favorite uncle. If you're interested in learning more about, like, our food, it's modernraw.com or modern_raw on Instagram. Love that's it. And thank you, Tom. Thank you for your time. Thank you for, like, man, making the dog community and world be seen in a different light. Because to give you some kudos, if you don't mind, I'll...
Please, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Something...
I got time for that.
Oh, you have time for that? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, baby. But something I tell my students, you already do. And I use you a lot. And I will say, what you want to try to do is become pop music, right? I think the dog training community is too heavy metal with the working guys. Or, you know, maybe you could say classical music with like the overly positive stuff.
Sure.
Right? But the cool thing is, if you're pop music, you identify with everybody. You identify with country, you identify with rock, you yeah. identify with classical, you identify with opera. Everybody knows that one Miley Cyrus song.
Mm-hmm.
But no one knows that Death Leppard song.
Right.
You
right.
know what I mean? So
yeah.
be pop music. Be more relatable. It's okay to be in your lane, but don't shun away the people that are actually interested in learning from you, because it's not part of the community you've cultivated. Mm. You did a great job of being able to reach working dog people, regular pet owners, positive, correction, balanced, so much so that you're international,
mm-hmm.
right? You're all around the world. And anybody, whether I agree with all your methods or not, fuck me, because you're doing it. So anybody that doesn't agree with you or has a lot to say, fuck them, because they're not doing the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Right? It speaks because people are responding. The dogs are responding. Whether they agree with it or not, it doesn't matter, Tom.
Right.
Hey.
Gotta remind myself that sometimes.
Hey, fucking real, dude. I know we don't know. Ironically, guys, I don't fucking know this guy.
Right.
Right? I'm glad I sent you that DM. It's fucking cool. But I told you when I walked in here, I'm like, hey, bro, fucking congratulations. This is a fucking big fucking deal, dude. This is a lot.
Thank
you. For you, your family, dogs, community, people, business owners, men, women, it doesn't matter. You're doing a lot. You are.
Thank you.
You. Like, I mean that. I mean that sincerely. Like, you did, like, fuck everybody. Like, I'm weird like that, you know? Fuck them. They don't want to watch me. They don't want to listen. They want to talk shit. Cool. It doesn't matter. It matters to your wife, your kids, and your community. And you're doing it globally. Those people that have those comments, they're just in their basement. They're not global. They don't care. You got to hate on something. Don't let them. Or you know what? Fuck it. Be the villain. Be even better. Do more.
Love that, bro.
Hey, proud of you, bud. Yeah, I'm fucking proud of you. You're doing a good job.
Thank you so much. Oh, yeah. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Woohoo!
All right. Bye.